The first reading today comes from Naomi Shihab Nye. She was born in St. Louis in 1952. Her father was a Palestinian refugee, and her mother an American of German and Swiss descent. And Nye spent her adolescence in both Jerusalem and San Antonio, Texas. Her experience of cultural differences and different cultures has influenced much of her work. After the World Trade Center bombing in 2001, Nye became an active voice for Arab Americans, speaking out against both terrorism and prejudice. This poem is taken from her book, Red Suitcase, from 1994.
I see. The name of the poem is Shoulders. I was thinking the name of the poem was A Red Suitcase. Sorry. Shoulders. A man crosses the street in rain, stepping gently, looking two times north and south, because his son is asleep on his shoulder. No car must splash him. No car drive too near his shadow. This man carries the world's most sensitive cargo, but he's not marked. Nowhere does his jacket say fragile. Handle with care. His ear fills up with breathing. He hears the hum of a boy's dream deep inside him. We're not going to be able to live in this world if we're not willing to do what he's doing with one another. The road will only be wide. The rain will never stop falling.
The second reading today is from the book The Call to Service, A Witness to Idealism by Robert Coles. It is a book that Eboo Patel found particularly helpful in his attempts to make meaning of the many years of volunteer activity and his search for identity. In this passage, Coles, a child psychologist by profession, is referring to a college-level class that he taught entitled The Literature of Social Reflection. Here, literature is used to connect the intellectual and moral issues posed by the readings to the students' everyday struggles, to figure out what they are trying to do and to what effect, how they are to learn about people who are different from themselves, and how those people regard them and their purpose.
For students doing community service and for older people working as volunteers, some of those books can be a means of looking inward, of stepping back a bit, taking a break to think about matters broader than the day's hurdles or challenges. A student in that course who also worked in a nearby church's soup kitchen used some of those books and the class discussion devoted to them in the following manner. I stand there in that soup kitchen and I wonder at times what I'm doing there, whether it makes a difference at all other than to me. I know I feel better for being there, but often the people I am waiting on get mean to each other or to me. They say rude things, crude things, and I get fed up with myself for being so critical sometimes of the people who run the kitchen and the people who come there, both. At such times, I'll remember some of William Carlos Williams' stories, his admission of what went through his mind, how he really felt. He presented himself as a good doctor who was out there to help people. But he was also, every once in a while, demanding, impatient, prejudiced, angry, preoccupied with himself, vain, and indifferent to others, because he was rushed and hectic with other things on his mind. Sometimes I want to read other writers presented in the class. They look at people in real trouble, but they don't make you feel sick, because for a moment you wanted to scream back at someone who is screaming his bloody head off while you're trying to offer him a bowl of soup and some bread. I shouldn't feel angry like that. I shouldn't feel angry at people who are alcoholics or schizophrenics or both, or at others who are trying to help them and help me help them. But sometimes I can't help myself.
I had the privilege of attending a first-year UU ministers retreat in Boston last month. This was a gathering of 35 relatively recently fellowship ministers serving in their first parish or community minister position. We came together to create community, to meet, talk, sing, trade notes, worship, eat, and learn with each other. It was a wonderful experience in many ways as we shared our joys and challenges of delving into this relatively new profession for us. Another highlight for me was finally visiting 25 Beacon Street, the headquarters of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. That's a mouthful. My first visit there. As I told several people before leaving for Boston, for a UU, this is like going to Mecca. As most of you know, Boston was a center of Unitarian and Universalism activity during the 19th century. The building at 25 Beacon Street and its streets in and surrounding Beacon Hill are rich with history of our religious ancestors. 25 Beacon Street sits on the site of the home of Samuel Eliot, who founded the American Unitarian Association in 1825. I walked by the home of William Ellery Channing, the foremost Unitarian preacher and theologian in the United States at that time. Now, as a quick history lesson, Channing was a New England liberal minister, rejecting Calvin's doctrines of human depravity and the belief in predestination. Channing became the primary spokesman for Unitarianism with the delivery of a sermon in 1819, where he spelled out the tenets of the Unitarian movement, which, among other things, rejected the concept of the Trinity, claimed the goodness of humanity, and upheld the use of reason in evaluating revelation. I visited King's Chapel, built over 250 years ago, reminding myself that in 1787, it was the first church in America to declare itself Unitarian. I visited the Arlington Street Church, built over 150 years ago, where William Ellery Channing became their fifth minister in the early 1800s. And as an aside, if you haven't been to either one of these churches, it is well worth the time to do an internet search to look up their interior pictures. They are magnificent structures. Channing had a strong influence on one of his parishioners, Dorothea Dix, who worked tirelessly for the rights of the poor, insane prisoners. I also walked by the home that Louisa May Alcott purchased after her book Little Women became a commercial success. During that week, I visited the building housing Beacon Press, founded in 1854 as the publishing imprint of the American Unitarian Association. I thought about the history of the press as I was there, how it was the only publisher willing to take the risk of publishing the Pentagon Papers in book form in 1971. And I also thought about its long line of important authors that it publishes, and that includes the author that I'm going to talk about today. All of these people and the institutions they were part of made a difference in the world. Okay, I'll stop here with all these details, but just know that I took in a lot of history of our religious tradition, and it was an emotional experience for me. Although I initially felt some misgivings about going, I felt a connection with Unitarian Universalist Association in a different way than I ever had before, and a different connection with the Ministerial Fellowship Committee as well. Now, this committee of the UUA has jurisdiction over ministerial credentialing. To be honest, I have seen them in their gatekeeper role as I proceeded through ministerial formation. But with this retreat, and because I was willing to be vulnerable with the other new ministers, I felt a shift, seeing the committee rather as colleagues concerned with my professional and personal development. Like I said, going to Boston was a great experience for me. And now I want to shift to a different kind of ancestor. I used to envy people who talked about the history of their ancestors, the countries they came from, the people who had countries they could visit in areas that their grandparents or great-grandparents came from. Now, I know I have German and English ancestors, but I come from families that didn't talk about such things or who these people were. So I never really had stories or places to claim as my own. But it was during my seminary days when I studied about the early Unitarian and Universalist folks, those who have succeeded them, and those who we can point to as their forebears, whose heretical theology paved the way for those who later claimed the title of Unitarian or Universalist, that I decided they could be my ancestors. I didn't have to think of myself as rootless, left with just wishing I were Irish on St. Paddy's Day, for instance. I could adopt these religious folks, as it were, as my own long-ago kin. So that is why my days in Boston were so important to me. I learned more about those I claim as my ancestors, religious and more, and saw some of the houses they used to inhabit and the streets they used to walk on, which made them come alive for me. Which brings me to the UUA's book selection this year, Ibrahim Ibu Patel's memoir, Acts of Faith, published by Beacon Press, has been selected as the common read this year. This is a story of one American search for identity set against the backdrop of his Indian and Muslim heritage, his return to faith, and his commitment to improving the lives of young people. Unitarian Universalists are being asked to read this book and join in discussing it. This is important because reading and sharing your responses can build community in both our congregations and our movement by giving diverse people a shared experience, shared language, and a basis for deep, meaningful conversation. In a bit, I will tell you about how this book has impacted youth in our congregation and in the Central Ohio community. Patel is an American Muslim born in India who grew up outside of Chicago. During his youth, he struggled for identity, being told over and over that he didn't fit in. Yet he was not willing or able to claim his national or religious heritage. He tried hard to fit in with the white kids, trying to come up with ways he could make others like him, or at least make them dislike him less. But the result was being bullied, sometimes quite cruelly. In grade school and high school, he felt a lack of identity, believing that India and Islam could not coexist within him. Thinking he had to choose one over the other left him feeling cut off from himself and distanced from others. His Muslim parents, although caring, did not understand what he was going through, and it made matters worse as he tried to explain things to them. During his growing up years, his parents, leading busy lives, often left the youthful Patel to his own devices at times. As a young person, Patel did not mind the lack of religious ritual that his parents were too busy for. As he describes it, "That was fine with me. My energy was focused on trying to fit in as a brown kid in a white world." On the occasions of important religious holidays, when his parents could convince him to attend mosque, he would look at the worshipers from his home country, finding them an inferior breed. As he said it most clearly, "I was no longer wondering what the white kids at school would say about these people. I had adopted their sneer." As Patel distanced himself from his own being, his ability to connect with others also suffered. He tells of a painful high school experience when a Jewish friend was subjected to anti-Semitic offenses. Speaking of his inability to act in the face of these crimes, he tells readers, "I did not confront them. I did not comfort my Jewish friend. I knew little about what Judaism means to him, less about the emotional effects of anti-Semitism, and next to nothing about how to stop religious bigotry. So I averted my eyes and avoided my friend because I could not stand to face him." Patel continues, "A few years later, the friend described to me the fear he had experienced coming to school those days and his utter loneliness as he watched his close friends simply stand by. Hearing him recount his suffering and my complicity is the single most humiliating experience of my life," he said. "I did not know it in high school, but my silence was a betrayal. Betrayal of Islam, which calls upon Muslims to be courageous and compassionate in the face of injustice. Betrayal of America, a nation that relies on its citizens to hold up the bridges of pluralism when others try to destroy them. Betrayals of India, a country that has too often seen blood flow in its cities and villages when extremists target minorities and others too frail to protect them." Patel struggled, certainly, feeling he didn't fit in, forced into the role of an outcast that made his life very difficult, feeling rootless and disenfranchised. As he admits, "I had swallowed the pill of white supremacy whole during my high school and allowed its poison to spread through my body, believing that the idea of one's place in the world was defined by the color of one's skin, the income of one's parents, the shape of one's genitalia." During his undergraduate years, the influence of the 60s era radical black thought and his involvement in the 90s radical political consciousness flamed the anger and rage that had been ignited by his experience of being victimized by bullying. He became enamored with references to violence and its claim of its potential to force change. Taking to heart Malcolm X's early rhetoric of "by any means necessary," Patel too thought the answers lie in revolution and violence. Although rage was a part of him, he had other experiences during his teen and college years that countered these energies. During grade school and junior high, he participated in after-school YMCA activities since his parents did not return home until late. There he felt welcomed by boys he met there, even if those individuals snubbed him outside of the Y. As a teenager, he attended YMCA Leaders Camp, an activity that focused on volunteering as a key component to leadership development. What was important here, Patel points out, was his opportunity to feel his own power and to be able to play a role in making change. Patel was being changed, and learning leadership at an early age was an important component. It was his exposure to the wider world during his college years at the University of Illinois when he began to question his held assumptions. Because of the influence of his parents, who believed in service, Patel volunteered at a diversity of places, all activities that his radical friends distrusted. Yet he continued to give of himself, while the leaders of these social justice agencies became his mentors. At age 20, he took a position in Chicago, preparing high school dropouts to take the GED test. His absolute confidence quickly turned to panic and fear when he realized early on that he didn't know what he was doing. But through his experience, he learned the hard way how to constructively engage the world. Patel was being changed, and service to others was an important component. He got to know people of other faiths as he began to recognize his own long-held but denied need for faith. Lisa, a Mormon, Emily, a Palestinian-American playwright, Sarah, a Jewish friend, Brother Wayne, a Catholic Hindu monk, and closer to home, he got to know his own Muslim grandmother better. Patel was being changed, and meeting a caring and committed individuals of other faiths was an important component. In college, Patel was introduced to the writings of James Coles, the book I took the reading from, Dorothy Day, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., and James Baldwin, just to name a few. All individuals who presented him with an alternative to the violence he espoused. From Baldwin, Patel learned several life-altering things, that being a victim of racism did not automatically translate into being consumed by anger, that people were meant to be diverse, and people were meant to live together. Patel learned through Baldwin that not only was America worth fighting for, but that he could use his power for good. Patel was being changed, and mentoring was an important component. Dorothy Day's writings of the Catholic worker movement particularly inspired him. He says, "In those writings, I found an articulation of what it meant to be human, to be radical, and to be useful. Here's what I had been seeking for so long, a vision of radical equality, all human beings living the abundant life. That could be achieved through both direct service approach and a change the system politics." He says, "For so long, these two things had existed in separate rooms in my life, a different group of friends, a different way of talking for each. Here was a movement that combined both. Finally, the two sides of myself could be in the same room. The most radical part of Dorothy Day and the Catholic worker movement was the insistence that everything the movement did was guided by a single force, love." Patel was so intoxicated by Day's philosophy and dedication that volunteering with Catholic workers became his community during the college years, and his involvement had a profound effect on him. Their dedication to their vision of God and the belief that humanity needs to be the source of love, equality, and connection touched him in a deep way that fed his psyche and spoke to his need for spiritual connection. Yes, Patel was being changed, and learning how to serve with individuals of other faith was an important component. Later, in reflecting on the degree of distance he felt from himself and others, his rage in the earlier years, and on the difference that mentors, both in person and via his reading, made on him, Patel was struck by possibilities that may have been otherwise. He recognizes that the 21st century poses a division between religious totalitarianism, those who believe that only one interpretation of one religion is legitimate, with outsiders deserving death, and religious pluralism, those who believe that people belonging to different faith communities need to live together in a proactive, cooperative way. Patel said that it scared him to realize how easily he could have, at one point in his life, been sucked into carrying out violence in the name of a distorted religious faith. As he states it, an eerie feeling crept over me as I stared at the faces of the London bombers, especially the three who traced their history back to the subcontinent. Their travails in school, their relationship with their parents, their indifference to Islam as adolescents, followed by an intense engagement. It all felt very familiar. I sensed a flicker of recognition from a deep place, he continues. A piece of their story was a part of me. I knew one bomber's anger in a dangerous way, for Patel, too, had felt anger from being bullied. He was indifferent to his faith as a youth, and he had been influenced by others in dangerous ways. The thesis of his book is that influence matters, programs count, mentors make a difference, and institutions leave their mark. Finding and embracing one's identity is of utmost importance. Patel found a deep connection to Islam, which enabled him to blossom. He realized that his heroes were people of deep faith and of differing faiths. Martin Luther King Jr., James Baldwin, Godwin, Gandhi, the Dalai Lama, Dorothy Day, the Aga Khan, the spiritual leader of the Ismaili Muslims, that cooperating religiously had been central to their work, to most of these individuals. Nye's poem calls us to the wisdom that Patel discovered. We may not find the words fragile, handle with care, written on the jackets of those we meet, but nonetheless those words are there, stitched into the fabric of the world. Religious pluralism calls us to hear the hum of the boy's dream, nurturing those dreams in a way that will benefit the world. It is understanding that the wide road will contain many different religious interpretations of what is spiritual, but we must give our care if we want to continue having a world worth living in. Patel learned how to respond to callings such as Nye's, coming from deep inside himself. In 1998, he founded the Interfaith Youth Corps, designed to inspire and train college students to build understanding. He understood how significant it is to involve youth with their passion and energy to use their power for peace and goodwill with the help of caring mentors. In a decade, the Interfaith Youth Corps has grown into a national movement. Patel has become a leading voice for embracing religious pluralism, and he has a featured column in the Washington Post entitled "The Faith Divide." As well, President Obama named him to the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnership. In Central Ohio, the Interfaith Action Movement of Youth involves bringing young people of faith and conscience into contact with one another to engage in religious diversity in a very positive way. This group has collaborated with the Racial Diversity Task Force of this church in organizing Burn No Sacred Books, the 9/11 service presented here in 2010. And in the We All Belong, a rally for inclusion held at First Congregational Church in 2011. And even closer to home, the UUA and Patel's IFYC collaborated on a curriculum entitled A Chorus of Faiths, Unitarian Universalism as Interfaith Leaders. The youths explore values of service to our community and religious pluralism through stories, personal storytelling, and coordination of an interfaith service. Battelle understood well the student speaker in the second reading. He was that confused student at one time himself, attempting to make sense out of uncomfortable feelings that he wished he didn't have. Patel's mission is to support individuals like this who see value in service, yet who struggle making sense out of what they feel. Religious pluralism emphasizes that the well-being of each individual depends on the health of the whole and on young people's desire to have clear identity. Patel reclaimed his Muslim faith through much hard work and the positive influences of many individuals. And perhaps the most surprising one was his grandmother. His view of her growing up was someone pushing Muslim prayers on him that he didn't really want. But it was not until years later that he grasped another aspect of her, her dedication to the service of others. His grandmother taught him the meaning of service when he found out how many destitute women and children she had taken in over the years to give a helping hand. "I am a Muslim. That is what Muslims do," she told him when he asked. T.S. Eliot wrote that tradition is not simply inherited. It is something acquired only by great labor. It was the ethic of service and pluralism in Islam that enlivened Patel. Which brings me back to my identity and some questions I have for you. My time in Boston served to strengthen my ties to Unitarian Universalism, helping me to claim more firmly my roots and how they stabilize and feed me. My religious forebears spoke their truth, enabling them to stand up for what their hearts and minds called them to be. And I strive to live up to their demands and their ideals. They are encouraging me to ask myself, in what ways am I being called in the world differently? How does your tradition make a real difference in your life? And what great labor are you willing to devote to it? Unitarian Universalism can be a church of the negatives. What we don't believe, the creeds we don't have, how we aren't like other churches. But can you name what it is that is holding you to being a UU? Like Dorothy Day, can you find in your faith an articulation of what it means to be human? Similar to Patel's grandmother, can you say, "I am a UU, and this is what UUs do"? How does Unitarian Universalism feed and sustain you? The author deeply strengthened his bonds to his Muslim faith through sharing himself with people of other faiths, Catholics, Jews, Sunni Muslims, Mormons, and Christians, learning what sustained them in their faith. How can your sharing with others outside of your faith strengthen your commitment to your faith? And concerning youth involvement, sadly, too many adults consider the absence of young adults in religious communities the natural course of events, viewing youth as too other or maybe too difficult to understand. The truth is that adults aren't always interested in involving youth in faith communities, despite what we say we desire. How can we make that difference here in Columbus? What would happen if we gathered our youth and our adults together to discuss Patel's book? What might change? And just as a reminder, if you didn't notice it in the insert, later this afternoon, there's a soulful sundown service here, a dynamic, interactive, contemporary worship service led by our young adults. Why not come by and see what might be different?